Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Cape Town band Lost Youth is known for the unique fusion of raw 90s rock energy with classic 70s sound. Fronted by powerhouse vocalist Alana Joy, whose fierce yet tender vocal style explores themes of love, heartbreak, and self-discovery, accompanied by the melodic bass of Charlie Charles and the driving passionate guitar of Fakhri Hendrix, the band has finally solidified its lineup with drummer James Turner, a seasoned musician who has performed with well-known South African acts such as Systematic and Girls on Film. The group's sound combines nostalgia with modern elements, creating a dynamic and ever-evolving listening experience. Following the success of their debut EP, Chasing Shadows, Lost Youth released their second EP, First Light, in May of 2024, to widespread praise from fans and critics alike. The EP has been featured on multiple radio stations and playlists, with Ear Milk hailing it as a poignant journey through the complexities of the human experience. The band are embarking on their fifth national tour and will see them performing alongside some of South Africa's top local acts, including Indie Dog and Dan Patlansky. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Alana Joy from Lost Youth. So where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm here in Cape Town, South Africa, and I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm also lovely. Thank you so much for asking. How did the name Lost Youth come? And how did you guys decide to do it, Lost/Youth? Where did that come from?
We took a while to actually come up with a name because we originally started playing under my name, Alana Joy. And we quickly realized, okay, this is more than just, you know, a solo project with some session musicians. This is a real band and we wanted to be represented as a real band. We took some time to figure it out. But Lost Youth basically came from... We came up with the name during lockdown, during COVID times, and it felt like there was this generation of youth that kind of felt lost in the sense that the path that we thought we were meant to take, the path that was laid out before us when we were kids, had drastically changed. And I just felt like there was this generation that also had lost a lot of time to the pandemic. I mean, I guess everybody did, but when you go into the pandemic at the age of 22 and you come out at the age of 25, you know, it feels like now I'm a real adult. And I miss that section of my life a little bit. So that's where it kind of came from, but it's evolved and it's turned into new beautiful things. And I love hearing people's perception and interpretations of the meaning. Yeah, it's always very inspiring.
So when I look at it, those two lines, slashes for me, look like a path. Okay. And Lost is the beginning, but then when you find your inner child and your youth, it guides you back on your path. That's what I see.
I love that. And I feel like it actually fits the music so well. I think I might steal that.
That's beautiful. Please do. I'm glad I had some input into that because that's just what came to me, gut instinct. So let's rewind to the very beginning. At what age did you feel cool? You want to be in the creation world, creating music, et cetera, et cetera. How did that lend itself to the journey of meeting the rest and then where we are today?
When did I first feel cool? probably not that often, but I guess when I'm up on stage with the boys, there's this level of comfortability and this level of vulnerability that I feel like I can kind of just say anything. I think that's kind of what cool means to me, because you're level-headed. You're not trying too hard. You're just letting yourself be yourself. And maybe that's not the true definition of cool, but that's what I think is cool.
The thing is that, you know, there's a dictionary definition. And the thing is that every person has their own dictionary definition in their brain. So your definition of cool is that. Mine will be someone else, something else, and someone else's will be something else. But the problem is that everyone's assuming that everyone's got the same definition, and that's what causes breakdown of communications. So, interesting definition.
No, definitely. Well, if we're talking about where it began, I mean, I've been playing music for years, but it was really when I met the, the boys and the band that it turned into this thing that it is today. And I feel like that's where we've found our sound. And we actually started playing at a little open mic night that I used to host in Observatory. And it was a beautiful thing. Every Wednesday, a whole lot of local musos would get together and make music and also just talk about the industry and kind of try to unmask some of the things that are usually not really spoken about, and kind of just being there for each other and creating community. And that's where I met the boys, and we slowly started playing together. And then we quickly realized that this is it. This is the thing. These are our musical soulmates. And yeah, it's been a beautiful journey ever since.
So when you said unmask things that are not normally spoken about, like what things? Like things that a lot of people on the outside observing artists think they have this easy, successful journey, when in fact it's damn hard work. It's a lot of slog and et cetera. Am I on the right track, or what other elements we discussed?
Yeah, I think it's also, there's definitely sort of barriers within the industry and sort of glass ceilings that people kind of pretend aren't there, or just that we don't really talk about very often. I mean, Cape Town is particularly cliquey, but I do think it's kind of like that everywhere. It's kind of about who you know. People put their friends on the lineup, because they trust them and they know them, and it makes sense. But how do you get into that group of friends? But I think we largely also spoke about payment, because that was a big thing. We were often all playing the same venues. We all had similar amount of experience, and I thought we were all at a similar level of talent or skill, whatever you want to call it. But I found that if you ask for 800 rand, that's what you're going to get. If you ask for 4,000 rand, that's what you're going to get. If you ask for 10K, they'd probably say no when you're starting out, but who knows? Maybe you'll get that. And we kind of found it was really helpful to talk to other musicians and be like, oh, we both played that gig. You played it last week. I played it the week before. What did you get paid? And that was very interesting. And there was also a lot of talk about, certain venues. And there was one venue in particular that had a relatively nasty character in charge of it. And there was a lot of sexism and a lot of like sexualization of young females in the industry through this one venue owner. And very quickly we all realized that same thing. And that was one of the places where we realized it, because we just started talking about our experiences. I think that's one of the ways that communities like that within the music industry just help you protect each other and help you realize your value as well, often, I think.
Why do you think, and this is just throwing it at you, why do you think some artists would say to a venue, listen, we'll take an 800 rand, and another one would take 4,000 rand? Is it a situation of not having the knowledge and experience, or is it also a thing of like, oh, this band doesn't believe they're worth that much, and this other band thinks they're worth more, but are also pushing their luck? Do you think it's a combination of all those things put together?
I do. We often hum and ha about how much to charge a venue or how much to charge a festival, because it's difficult. You want to cover your costs, you want to make profit. How much
Yes.
profit, is reasonable? How much can the venue afford? But I think it's also just, it's exactly as you say. I think a lot of artists don't know the value. And I think when you first start out, you often go to the venue and say, hi, I want to play. And they tell you the fee. And they say, yeah, it's 800 bucks for 3 hours of music. And if nobody tells you, no, that's actually not correct, you're just going to go out and keep doing that. And when do you learn that actually at a standard restaurant gig for a cover set, it's like 2,500, 3,000 that you should be getting? Who tells you that? You just don't know. And I also do think that there's some people that kind of learn that skill or learn that value of their art by having that confidence in themselves and saying, you know what, this is actually what I need to survive. This is what I must be paid, because
Yes.
my music is valuable enough to survive off of, and hopefully to thrive off of. But that is obviously a rare situation in South Africa, for musicians to actually be able to live off of their music. But yeah, I think it's a combination of all of the factors, and also just fear of being rejected. And then there is also the element that a lot of the bands that Or a lot of the musicians that play, particularly cover shows, they have full-time careers. So they can play for 800 bucks. It doesn't really matter what they're getting paid. They're doing it for the love of it, which is beautiful, but it does kind of undercut
Yes.
the, general sort of collection of musicians. Yeah.
It's an
It's all
interesting,
very interesting. I could
yeah,
go on for ages.
it's very interesting discussion. But now, we've sort of segued there. So I'm diving into this. I have this conversation with all the artists I speak to. And we spoke about value of the art and, that it is valuable. I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I believe it's an energy exchange with you guys to say thank you for all the hard work and creativity that you create literally in one song, never mind 10 or 15 or 20. I love the journey of the choice. I love the unpacking, the receiving, the listening from song one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes can believe, and albums, vinyls, massive comebacks around the world. Last year alone in the UK, 5.9 million as vinyl sold, the biggest since 1990. There's a vinyl factory in Asia that's just reopened after being closed for 50 years. In the UK, there's a basket of goods that they gauge for tax purposes. And vinyls have been in that basket for the longest time, but because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in that basket. And the research is showing it's not the older nostalgic people that are buying and diving into it. It's actually the teenagers, the early 20s that are like diving. Ah, I want the physical. But then we also have these streaming platforms that people observe or consume music on. What are your perceptions of the landscape at the moment?
Yeah, I love that. And I find that very interesting that you have those facts because I've been sort of waiting for this resurgence to happen and I've been hoping for it. Because vinyl is also just super expensive. And for young artists, it's very difficult to print and afford to be able to print. CDs, I love CDs. Oh my God. I have a ton of CDs. I have a CD player in my car still. I love putting on a CD. It's such an experience. And I found that my consumption habits on Spotify and Apple Music are very passive. I often don't even know the song names. I just press play on an artist and I love that artist, you know? Like Noah Kahan, for instance, like I love him, but I wouldn't actually be able to say what most of his songs are actually called. I can sing them word for word, but it's a completely different experience. Whereas when you have a CD, you're looking at the back of it and you're consuming it in a completely different way, in a very active way. I think the landscape is unsustainable. I think it's not really possible for it to stay the way that it is. I think it was never meant to be like this. I think paying 69 rand or whatever it is for unlimited music per month is just it's devaluing the music to an extent that it's just not sustainable. The problem is that musicians kind of just take it lying down, and it's been like that. Now it is the new norm. So to get away from the new norm is very difficult. But I see that when you look at the trends of the music industry, every couple of years it shifts. And I expect there to be another shift, and I wouldn't know what that shift would be. And maybe it is actually just as fashion goes, recycling these trends of these ways in which we've consumed. And I think that would be really beautiful if CDs came back, because it's such a beautiful way to experience it. And there's the lyric book, and you get to read
Yeah.
about, the artist. And it's not just this sort of digital platform. And I mean, you can make digital engaging and you can make it meaningful, but having something that is physically in your hand is just, yeah, it just always feels different.
Yeah.
So I hope it goes back to CDs. I don't know what's going to happen next, but I'm sure something is going to happen soon that changes the landscape again,
Yeah.
because that's the trend of how it's always been, I think.
But also the thing is that, like, I saw a clip of Snoop Dogg the other day saying, like, they got paid so little for this, so much, so many streams and that. The artists are starting to voice. But the other challenging thing is that I speak to a lot of people who are not really in the industry who are just sort of consumers and observers and on the peripheral, like they like a song, they like an artist. And a lot of artists put on, oh, they had 100 million streams or they had 200 million streams. So the people seeing that think, oh, wow, they made so much money. They don't realize for those 100 or 200 million streams, they literally got $1,000 or something as ridiculous as that. So I think there needs to be an education bridge that happens between the industry and the consumers, which I think is starting to happen by more and more artists speaking out, like Snoop Dogg and that, to say, yes, cool, I got 200 million streams. I appreciate it, but can I get more of these royalties on those streams?
I think it's also just so difficult because, I mean, seemingly from the stats that I've been looking at, Spotify is still not profitable as a company. obviously the CEO is getting paid lots, and so are the, probably the high level of employees. But as a company itself, it's like one of these tech companies like Uber and all of these things that aren't actually that profitable in reality, despite their, stock price being high. And to me, that just means that the value that we've placed, the price point that we've placed on music is just, it's just way too low.
Exactly.
If the company themselves can't make profit, if the artists aren't making enough profit and actually not making profit, because to record an album is bloody expensive.
Exactly, yeah.
And unless you are selling merch and touring really, really hard and kind of constantly as a smaller artist, you're never going to see that money back. I mean, even the bigger artists are turning towards tours and merchandise to make money. And it's sad that the music itself, the recording itself, which is really valuable, is just not being,
Seen as that,
that
yeah.
value is not being, yeah,
Exactly.
exactly.
But yeah, that's
But
why
I
so,
mean,
sorry to interrupt. That's why so many
yeah.
artists these days are going on tour. Like they hadn't been on tours for a while because now it's their only income, the only revenue stream. I like, unless they were like the big ones who made all the millions in the 80s and 90s and they can sort of relax, sit back and relax. But you need to keep working and stuff. So yeah, it's a interesting debate and interesting discussion. You referenced performing live earlier. Oh, sorry. Did you want to say something more on the topic or?
Oh, the last thing I wanted to say is just that I also do see the value in platforms like Spotify and Apple Music, because in some ways you are reaching a new audience,
Yeah.
and it's very easy to reach an international audience. If we had to do CDs, we would have to somehow get them to the UK and South
Yeah.
America. Now, most of our streams actually come from UK and South America, and we just have to put it online and they come to it,
Yeah, yeah.
So there's definitely the aspect of visibility and access and, being exposed to new audiences. But it's just that value that we've placed on it, I think that's my biggest issue.
Yeah.
If we were paying 500 rand a month for our music, which is only a couple of CDs really, that would, I think, make a huge shift. And the way that we pay artists, and also the payment structure, because Spotify's payment structure is not per stream, it's a pool, and it's split between the artists and the percentage of the streams that they've received, something like that. I mean, you'd
Yeah.
have to probably do some research, but it's not just per stream, it's this weird system that they've created that seemingly benefits the big artists and not really the smaller artists.
Let's just buy more education and more speaking and more energy. It will create more of a balance. So let's just put that out there. So, what do you enjoy about performing live?
I think performing live for me is probably my favorite part of music, besides possibly the actual songwriting itself. It feels very cathartic. It's like when everything goes into that zone, when you're not thinking about anything else and you're not wondering about, what the audience thinks, and you're not wondering if you're going to play the right chord next, or what the drummer's playing. You're just in that moment, and especially when you're playing with a band like that, when there's four people that are just all connected together in this state of flow, that to me is just the most magical feeling. And it feels magical. It feels almost like religious or like spiritual in the sense of it just like, how can people be so connected? How can I know exactly what the guitarist is going to play? And not because he's practiced that 1,000 times, he's playing something different on the solo, but I'm going to sing at the same time and somehow hit that same note with him. And we just catch each other, and it's like, and also when you're writing songs like that as well, it's just really magical when you don't know where the other person's going to go, and you're literally writing the song in the first place, and yet you somehow hit the same vibe or the same notes, and you just follow each other. And that, yeah,
But if
sliding
you,
away from live music, but that's what I love the
no,
most.
but I mean, if you think of it, that's life because we are all energy. Everything's energy, inclusive of music, and energy flows. It flows and interacts. And the problem is that everyone is trying to control things. If you think of control, every person who says they've got things under control, if you stand here now in one place trying to hold on to energy, something that is unseen by the these eyes, it's normally the third eye that can feel energy, but people stand and try and can hold on and control things. If you cannot see it and it's something that's flowing and interacting, how can a person ever have something, say they've got something under control? Because normally those people, when life happens, then they lose the plot.
That's true. I think there has to be an acceptance of this, that everything is constantly moving and changing, and the natural state of the universe is chaos. So you can't control it. You have to kind of go with the ebb and the flow. I mean, look, I'm somebody that does like control. I like to believe that I'm in control, but it's clearly not the case most of the time. I think what I like to control actually is I know that nothing is in my control, but I like to try to control certain elements and try to sort of put in things that, while we've been planning this tour, there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong. So I'm trying to sort of preempt and plan and do the work for as much as I can, even though I can't control anything. I can control myself and I can sort of position myself and the band to be in the best position. And hopefully nothing terrible will happen on tour, touch wood, because we've thought of all the, hopefully thought of all the things that could
Well, also the
possibly
thing
go
is that
wrong.
it's about that positive intention. And I'm not saying something will happen, but if something does happen, then it's just in anything in life, it's people like, oh, something goes wrong. But then aren't those the greatest learning experiences that we have?
They really are, and that, I mean, that's where most of my songs have come from, is from these like sort of terrible things that have happened. And I must say, like, I've recently had a few shitty things happen in my life, health and heartbreak and weird things. And actually sort of going through it and coming out of it, and when I say coming out of it, I just mean everything's still happening, but I'm lifting myself above the chaos to kind of be able to see it and to not let it consume me and depress me and, tear me up inside. And it's quite freeing when you kind of, when you get to that point. And sometimes you have to go through the actual real difficult part to get to that point. But when you get to that point and when you can reflect on it and you've realized what you've learned, that's, yeah, it's very freeing.
The challenge is with a lot of humans, they don't choose to learn the lessons. They just go through the same cycles. So you referenced the.
What a lot of our songs are about, actually, is just these lessons that we learn. And I'll sing the song that I wrote 4 years ago, and I'll be like, oh, I'm learning that same lesson again right now. But at least I've, learning it from my own song
Yes,
again
exactly.
and my own experiences, I guess.
You referenced the tour that's coming up. Tell us all about it.
So we release an EP in May called First Light, and it's basically a part of this two-part concept project that we've been working on. The first EP was called Chasing Shadows, and it was a bit dark, and it was a lot about heartbreak and loss and sadness. And now this one is called First Light, and it does feel a lot lighter. It's a little bit more acoustic. It's more self-reflective. It's more about, as you say, like the lessons that we've learned. And now we are touring it. So now we're going to Durban and Pretoria and Joburg. We've already played a lovely show in Cape Town. It was our fundraiser show. It was really beautiful. It's the first daytime show we ever did. We did like a little mini daytime festival, and we had thrift stores and tarot card readers, and it was just really fun. And now we're heading off on tour, and it's going to be about, I think, just less than 3 weeks that we're on tour, and we're playing with some of our favorite bands from around the country. We're playing with Poster Boy and Freddie L and Indie Dog, Dan Patlansky. Yeah, there's more. And sorry to the people that I didn't mention, but we love you. And I'm so excited to go on tour again. I do work a 9 to 5. I'm one of those musicians that cannot survive from the money as it is. And I'm so excited to just hit the road and to not think about my 9 to 5. Hopefully they don't contact me too much. I know they will, but it's fine. I accept it. But hopefully I just get to soak in the moment and enjoy it, because it's really my favorite thing in the world, is to just be on the road with the boys, creating music and playing music for people and meeting new people and seeing how the music connects with people that have never heard of us, that don't know us, that have no connection to us besides the music, and then they hear the music and suddenly now we know each other. Now we're friends, and I love that.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask this question in 2 years, 20 minutes, 5 hours, 50 years, I know your answer will be different every time, simply because there are millions of them and more coming out daily. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom? And if you can't think of specific songs, just top of head five artists.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But okay, so I know Hozier immediately comes to mind. I'm not sure what song right now, but maybe I'd say From Eden, because it's one of my favorites. I love Phoebe Bridgers and Boy Genius. Maybe Bite the Hand That Feeds You. I think that's Boy Genius. And oh, I love Halsey. Wouldn't know what song to choose. Yeah, I wouldn't know what song to choose. Tracy Chapman, For My Lover. And then I should probably pick a rock song in here or something like rock leaning, because otherwise the boys are going to be like, everyone's going to think we're pop now or like indie folk or something. But oh, Foo Fighters. Oh, let's do Foo Fighters. I love the Foo Fighters. I don't know what song, once again. I love times like these, but there's many, maybe Aurora. Yeah, there's some beautiful songs by the Foo Fighters. I watched them play live in Germany last year, and it was, I swear to God, the best 2 hours of my whole life. Some random person that I'd met literally a minute before they started playing put me on his shoulders for half the gig, more than half the gig.
Oh,
And I was on top of the world.
wow.
And Pat Smear looked right at me twice, and I grinned at him, and he grinned back at me. Dave didn't look at me. It's fine. I forgive Dave for not looking at me, but Pat Smear looked at me, and I was like, oh my God.
That's so funny. Lovely list. Most of them are on my list. I just need to add a couple. So thank you for that. The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Well, I guess I hope you go listen to our music. And if you do, I hope it makes you feel something.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.